We have a dream.
We have a voice.
This is
The Anchor Nation.
The Anchor Nation.
The Anchor Nation.
The Anchor Nation.
Hi, I am your host, Kevin Touch, and we are
The Anchor Nation.
Hello, Anchor Nation. This is Kevin Touch, the host of Anchor Nation Community Radio, and we're back with another episode of the Anchor Nation Podcast, episode 88 with Sean Dunn. It's been a while, but the return of Sean Dunn. Great guy. He's an Austin Waterproof Deck at this company. And he runs a great ship over there. He talks about just the adversity he struggled in real life to now. Hope you guys enjoy. This is episode 88 with Sean Dunn.
Hello, Anchor Nation. This is Kevin Touch, the host of Anchor Nation Community Radio. And we're back with another episode of the Anchor Nation Podcast, episode 88 with Sean Dunn. And without further ado, let Sean introduce himself.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me on. My name's Sean Dunn, and I live in Austin, Texas. I've been here about 5 years. I actually grew up in the Seattle area, and I have a small construction business here called Austin Waterproof Deck, and that's the long and short about me.
Awesome, man. Let's definitely get into this and hear about a little about your company and yourself. So, for the first part, how did you discover Anchor?
Well, I actually heard about Anchor through, I think, how a lot of your guests and probably a lot of people on the platform heard about it through Gary Vaynerchuk, and decided to check it out and play around with it. And that's where we connected first and had a couple quick conversations about 6 months ago.
Nice. And how did you get into Gary Vaynerchuk? What was the backstory behind that?
I had what moved me to Texas was a rep job. And so I had a lot of windshield time, a lot of time on the road, and I just listened to a lot of podcasts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I forget if his podcast came up as recommended or if I saw some videos, first, and really what the gateway was. I'd heard about him back in the day, and I just kind of knew him as this kind of, you know, brash, cursing wine guy, kind of brash, cursing, very opinionated wine guy. But I didn't really pay too much attention to him. Actually, in hindsight, I wish I had started paying more attention to him back in 2008 or so. But I think it was really probably in like 2015 or so that I started kind of consuming his content and really just kind of, enjoying the things he was saying. And not so much that they were so revelatory, but I think a lot of people say this, they were just ringing true. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, that's how I feel. Yeah, that's how I work. Yeah, fuck everybody else, and I'm gonna do my thing and fall in love with the process so then I was just kind of hooked from there, and even my current work, I have a lot of opportunity to listen to stuff while, you know, either I'm working at the office or working on a job, a lot of opportunities to consume his content and a lot of other podcasts too, but definitely in the, you know, business motivation sphere, he's been a big influence.
No, for sure. I think it's just not just him, but everyone else too attracted to him. I mean, it gives you that sense that he's one of these guys who paves the way for others like us to try to make it happen, levels the playing field eventually. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the next talking point is, what has the audio experience in the podcast world been like for you?
For me, mostly as a consumer. Kind of like I just said, I've got a lot of opportunity. My work allows a lot of time to listen to podcasts. I've produced a couple of podcasts, one where I interviewed my previous boss and the gentleman that actually took over the job I had that moved me here. And that was actually a great conversation. I got to know those guys, better than I had previously, even though I've known them for going on 10 years. That's the really interesting thing about podcasts. It's like, how often do we actually in our regular lives sit down with somebody with our phones off and just get to know each other one-on-one? It's not so common, but the podcasts, you know, seem to create a great opportunity for that. And, so recorded one with Paul and Kevin, and then, you know, recorded one little intro one where I just kind of rambled about what I'd like the podcast to be. But then also realized I wasn't quite in a spot where I could commit to really producing the podcast on a regular basis, you know, like you've done, for example. You're going to hit 100 in less than a year, and that's phenomenal. And I knew I just needed to get the, I needed to focus on the business a little bit more first before I incorporated that kind of into my routine. So far mostly on the consumer end, but definitely want to get more involved in producing content that, you know, I don't want to just talk. I want to bring value to the people that can hopefully benefit from that. So
for sure, for sure. And when you do produce content, what's the main focus going to be rather than just consume? Are you going to take a little bit of what you've been consuming and apply it, or the other way around, just focus on more of your business? What would be your strategy when you do start producing more?
Yeah, I think there's a few different ways I've thought about going about it. And I don't think a podcast has to always be the same format.
Right.
You know, so I think what I've envisioned is talking about small business in general, talking about the specific work that I do, and bringing value as far as educating other tradesmen that do the same processes that I do, to help lift everybody's game. I think I definitely want to produce some of that content that might just be me or me having those specific conversations with people. But then also beyond that, like talking to like the builders that I work with, or maybe even my competitors that do the same thing that I do, and talking about, you know, small business, entrepreneurship, life in general. Because I, you know, the more podcasts I listen to, you realize all these people, famous or not, we've all got so much in common, and that we're all facing so many of the same challenges, whether it's personally or professionally or family or, you know, community, world, whatever it is. And I just really think it creates a great opportunity for empathy for everybody you deal with when you realize, you know, we've all got our own shit, we're all going through our own thing. And hearing that from a wide range of people is really inspiring to me. So, you know, it's almost more, I want to have those conversations so I get that value, but then why not record it and put it out there? So even if one person listens to it and is able to make me, you know, maybe make a positive change in their life, that can then go on to affect one more person or two more people, and have that kind of compound effect is
right.
Just that's pretty inspiring to think about.
All right. Taking all the knowledge from everybody and just putting it into the podcast form gives you that opportunity, that heads up. And just another follow-up question. What'd you say? Anyone in particular you've talked to over this past couple of years that just really inspired you to start talking about this, or was it just more spontaneity as you go?
I think it was probably just consuming so many podcasts.
Gotcha.
And then, you know, I'm a very comfortable public speaker. So, you know, I think the most people I've ever had a chance to speak in front of was about 2000, and it was very briefly, you know, and I was still very young at that point. And now, you know, I'll be 39 this year, and I know I could go up in a football stadium. Yeah. My heart rate might get going a little bit. Right. But I'm not going to have any trouble getting up there and talking. And another thing that kind of reinforced that is I've actually done 5 comedy open mics, but same thing with podcasting as with the comedy. Like, I know if I really want to do that, I've got to commit to it. And have it be regular. It can't be just something I go do every month or two, you know, as a goof. One, because you're not going to get up. So you have to go to these open mics a lot before they start recognizing you and putting you up. But I think, you know, just realizing that the current opportunity of the internet and of podcasting, you don't have to be a celebrity with millions of followers. You can have a podcast that maybe only has 500 listeners, but maybe that's 500 listeners and 200 of them are actually highly engaged and getting value from it. And so just that thought alone is inspiring to me, you know, to try to have that positive impact and kind of, you know, just have that positive presence in the world and show people that, you know, we're kind of all out here dealing with the same things, and, you know, let's talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. It's that quality over quantity, and the positivity will always outweigh negativity. Absolutely.
Right.
And for question three, or talking point three, what is the backstory behind your business, Austin Waterproof Tech?
So, actually, I had this is my second run at having my own business. I had basically the same business in Seattle. It was called Seattle Waterproof Deck. And I did that for almost 7 years, and, you know, did a lot of good work. And I know that because I kept the same phone number even after we moved. And I've had calls, you know, for people to do more work, or that they needed their, you know, their project resealed or something like that. But, you know, I've had absolutely no calls of people complaining about the installations I did not being waterproof anymore, which is, you know, in this business, it's either waterproof or it's not, you know, and that's the call you dread, is that one of your installations failed. Because to me, I just take a lot of pride in my work, because I am, the work I do protects somebody's investment. You know, it's not just paint on a wall that makes it look pretty. It's basically a roof that you walk on. And the amount of damage that happens, I mean, I'm looking at a couple of projects right now, and it's just phenomenal to see what can happen when even just a little bit of water is allowed into a wood structure for a short amount of time. It creates absolutely catastrophic damage. And there's no Band-Aid fix, you know, to do it right once it's reached that point. So, you know, I did a lot of good work with Seattle Waterproof Deck, but didn't really run the business side of it that well. You know, probably wasn't paying close enough attention to job costs and things like that. You know, when I look back at it, and then also probably just a lack of discipline of hunkering down and getting more familiar with my actual costs and recovering from some of the financial mistakes that the company made early on that made it hard to kind of continue to operate. So, you know, basically it was just having had that experience previously, and then having gone through a couple jobs that were great opportunities and great people to work for that I'm still close with, both the jobs that I've had here in Texas, but then coming around to realize, like, I've got to work for myself. That's just how I'm wired. It's what makes me happy. And trying to go after a couple jobs because they offered, you know, a decent pay opportunity was just not the right move in the long term. So I decided just to hunker down, bite the bullet. And, you know, I started Seattle Waterproof Deck with nothing. I'm basically starting Austin Waterproof Deck with nothing. And yeah, that's the basic backstory of it. Just kind of really realizing I've got to work for myself. I love doing this work. It's an underserved niche in construction. And yeah, decided to go after it here in the Austin market. And, you know, it's proven itself. It's definitely underserved here. And it's going really well so far.
Nice, man. Nice. Not for sure. I think changing locations is the key in how you handle that. And I guess my next follow talking point would be, what is the change like between Seattle to Austin? What would you say is one thing that's stands out?
The biggest thing, and it's actually easy to get cynical about, is, and I try to stay away from that and go and, you know, acknowledge this, but then, okay, what can I do in the face of this? Is the difference in the culture of the trades. There's a phenomenal difference in craftsmanship from the Northwest to Texas. There's definitely craftsmen here, but there's so much fewer and farther between. Like, the baseline of what it means to be a tradesman here, that bar is so low here that it's, I mean, it's almost disgusting, really. Again, that's the cynical side of it. So, okay, what's the positive approach to that? That means there's an incredible opportunity to be a part of raising that bar and trying to set a standard that, you know, is higher than the market, and operate my business, treat my employees, treat my customers and the work in a way that I'm used to, instead of lowering my standards to how things are done here. Because that would be actually very easy to do things the way things are done here, which is not by the book, not in accordance with the rules, if you will, and leads to a lot of problems. I mean, just yesterday I looked at a deck on, you know, a brand new build, and there's 8 of these condos. They're individual units, but it's a condo development. And the first one they built is just built wrong and leaky. Mm-hmm. And then you look at these other 8 units that are less than a year old that people are living in now, you know, and I know that the sacrifice and the hard work that those people had to do to get in a position to be able to buy a home in a market like Austin, which is like most major cities in the US right now, just blowing up. House prices are skyrocketing. The competition is very tough to even buy a house. And so, you know, just knowing that I can hopefully play a more positive role in the market and produce a product that people aren't going to have trouble with less than a year after, you know, moving into an otherwise beautiful build, is really motivating to me. Yeah. And definitely the biggest difference between Saddle and here is just that general base level of quality that's out there. It's here, but it's harder to find. And it's just a lower standard than I'm used to. So.
Interesting. It definitely is those two locations having different standards makes your trends and how you have to read it. I'm sure you have to change some of that mentality too. But the next talking point, you can go over.
Yeah. No, it's not so much that I have to change, it's that I have to stay the same. Because if I was to stay change, it would be the path of least resistance, right? Okay, well, let me do things how everybody else here does things. They don't actually have W-2 employees. They pay everybody as a subcontractor, when technically they're actually an employee if you look at how they're being treated. But that releases the quote unquote employer from a lot of the obligations you have as an employer, even though they're skirting the law and how they're operating those people. They're employees. There's no way around it, but everybody's paid as a subcontractor. And so I'm actually choosing a harder road to hoe by going, no, anybody that does waterproofing for me is going to be a W-2 employee. I'm going to aim to have healthcare. I'm going to aim to have profit sharing. You know, actually the bigger goal is to build an employee owned company, which just creates a confused look on a lot of the people I talk to here. They don't understand why I'd want to, you know, give all that benefit up to the employees. It's like, well, because that's how you build a business. You're like you work for them. And that's a mentality, you know, go back to Gary Vaynerchuk. And that's something he said, quite a bit recently, and something that I've known for, you know, probably 20 years of early on in my working career. I got into management and realized, oh, my job as a manager isn't to tell everybody what to do. It's to facilitate everybody else's job so that it's easy to do. I'm not here with these people working for me. I'm working for them to ensure that they can, you know, do their job and provide the service that the company is trying to deliver.
I like that approach. You know, the employee definitely holds the high standards of, hey, that's someone's family you got to take care of. You know, that's somebody you have to realize that they got a lot of things on the line too, working for you. And it's the same way. And just, they show you respect. You show them respect. That's the real employee to boss relationship for sure.
Right. Right.
The next talking point I had though, is what are some challenges you have faced during the process of running? What's like the day in the life of Sean and the process of it?
Well, I think right now it's just being small. So, I mean, I've got 2 guys kind of on deck, and it looks like they'll actually be getting started here in the next couple of weeks. But, you know, right now it's just my wife and I, and so, you know, we're everything, going to look at jobs, doing the books, you know, actually installing the projects, you know, all the mobilization and all the bidding and everything. It's just kind of all on me, which is fine. I've been here before and I enjoy that. You have to, if you're going to start your own business, you know, kind of bootstrapping it with nothing, unless you got a million dollars to go hire a bunch of really seasoned people you're going to be doing it all in the beginning. So I think just, you know, that's been the main challenge. Luckily, I haven't had any, you know, real curveballs thrown at me yet. I think that's because I've done this before for 7 years. So I really feel like I'm more picking up where I left off without any of the baggage that I had before. And so I'm able to move forward. You know, with my previous company, I had some issues with staying disciplined with my taxes and staying up on those. Well, that is not happening so far. Like, the taxes are all getting paid on time and, you know, if not early. And, you know, all the financial fiduciary responsibility is being adhered to. So I'm making sure to stay on my projections and knowing where the company is at, knowing what our liabilities are. So yeah, so right now it's just been the manpower thing. But even that, I know I've been waiting for the right point to bring on employees. Cause that was also something I potentially did too early before, was bring on employees before I really understood everything that that meant. And so I knew, okay, for about the first year, you know, about 2 months now will be a year into this. I knew, okay, I'm going to just be doing most everything myself for the first year. So I really get settled in, get a few good clients. You know, I aim to work for builders. We work for homeowners also, but if you work for a builder who might have 3 or 4 decks for you a year and you get 10 or 15 of those, you'll stay busy, or at least, you know, get started, and then you can scale from there. So, you know, if there's been one challenge, it's just been making sure that I stay disciplined. And I feel like I've done a good job with that challenge.
Yeah, definitely staying disciplined, staying on top of things, both financially and just up to date with everything that's going on. And I think the one thing I took out of that was stay small. And my follow-up point would be, would you say staying small mentality will eventually lead to a more humbler approach as you get further in and start developing more employee to boss relationships and hiring more people?
Yeah, I think so. I think it gets you used to being realistic with what your production capacity is. You know, at the end of the day, we're selling our time. We're a service business. So, you know, I'll quote Gary Vaynerchuk 100 times in this interview, I'm sure, but you know, how do you scale the unscalable? I'm not selling a product or a widget where I just need 1,000 more orders and I can crank out 1,000 more from the factory that's producing them for me. You know, I'm producing a very technical, you know, highly labor intensive product that there's not a well of waterproof deck installers out there. You know, I could go out and find 100 carpenters tomorrow, or 1,000 painters tomorrow, but to put an ad in the paper and say you must be experienced with waterproof deck applications from these manufacturers, you know, in, you know, the residential stick built market, I could have that ad up for 6 months before I get somebody that even knows what I'm talking about. It's just such an underserved specialty. So many of the builders I talk to, they're like, oh, I'm so glad to meet somebody who does this, because, you know, I've had my tile guy do it, or I've had my roofer do it, or I've got my painter to do it. And whenever those guys do it, they just kind of make it up. And that's usually the thing I'm going back to fix, you know, 3, 5, 10 years later, tearing it all out, rot repair, you know, all that. So I think, you know, just controlling, being realistic about your production capacity and not over promising on what you can deliver, because it's real tempting to get a job that somebody wants you to do, but they need you to do it the next week. Well, sorry, I'm booked out 6 weeks and I know I'm going to have to do everything I can just to keep that schedule. Right. So if I shoehorn in another job, as small as it might seem, and that throws off 6 other projects, you know, no one job is worth that reputation with those next 6 customers. So it's better to not do a job than to take it on and then, you know, and then struggle through it, stressing yourself out, letting your customer down, leaving a bad taste in their mouth. I'd rather just pass on that opportunity and hopefully catch them on the next one. hopefully, you know, have impressed them with our portfolio or whatever reason they called us. They were intrigued by, you know, Instagram has been an incredible tool for us. As far as just having an active Instagram profile, doing the work, and then the builders have been calling me. I haven't had to go do any sales work. It's just been building a brand on Instagram. Has allowed us to get to this point where I'm now ready to bring on two guys and then know I can control the work. And, you know, it's the old saying, right? Don't bite off more than you can chew.
Right. No, at the end of the day, you want to deliver the best quality of content and the quality of job. If you take one that seems impossible or it's not really meant to be, that looks bad on you. Whereas if you let it come to you and be patient with it and, you know, be in the process of how much you can chew, it'll give you that advantage moving forward as you get down the road 6 months, like you said.
Right.
Next talking point would be, what are some events or things you have changed that helped your business in the past 3 months? So what are some things in the past 3 months that have just helped change your progress?
So it's been kind of interesting. I think in the last 3 months, just remaining patient. I mean, I know that that's not a change, but yeah, I mean, frankly, I've been just kind of haven't changed too much. I know that sounds weird, but trying to think of something, nothing really comes to mind. I think I'm actually in the process of doing some things right now that are going to change the business. So I could probably talk about that. So I'm actually been exploring a new opportunity with a home builder here in Austin who has a very unique business very unique business model. And so I've just kind of been exploring that on the side, and we're actually going to, be getting a project going here in the next couple of weeks. That's kind of a test for both of us to see if we want to do more work together. And that could actually turn into a whole different business. And actually, there's a question whether or not Austin Waterproof Deck would actually continue if that kind of goes the way we think it might. There's been the conversation of keeping it going. Obviously, I would still be in the market.
Right.
And so I wouldn't be abandoning any, you know, obligations I have to, you know, warranty on projects, even though knock on wood, I've never had a warranty callback. And I'm confident because of the process I go through in our installations that I can avoid that and deliver a quality product. But more than any change I've done in the last 3 months, I think is what could be changed in the next 3 months. And I could be a whole different business that I'm doing. And actually building full homes from the ground up. So I think maybe something that's different from the past is that I've been happy to stay consistent with what we're doing, staying small and just taking the work we can handle. And that's been more than enough to provide, you know, for my wife and I. And exploring this opportunity. I've been exploring this opportunity for about 6 months. It's been something that's kind of been on the side, and it's a conversation. It's a big conversation because it's actually talking about combining the companies, actually becoming, you know, equity partners together in a whole new kind of business structure. But so no big changes in the past 3 months, but just trying to stay patient. And so that's probably a change from the past that I've, you know, maybe tried to charge forward. So
that's all good.
Yeah.
No, that's all good. Staying patient, you know, trying to see what the market holds in the next couple months. I guess the next 3 months moving forward will be more of the real answers, to say the least, rather than going back 3 months and seeing what could happen. So definitely just keeping a humble mind, staying patient, really gives you that mindset to overcome for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, let's we'll do a follow up in 3 months, and I'll let you know what's changed.
There you go. There you go. I guess the next talking point is what are some things you've been doing with location and weather, and how you manage your clients? Like, sure. What's just the location and weather been with compared to Seattle to Austin? What are some things that you see or notice, and how you manage your clients?
Right. So, you know, the main difference is just the, you know, obviously the climate difference between Texas and the Northwest. Something that's very interesting about Austin and Seattle is they actually get very similar amounts of rain, but the delivery is different. In the Northwest, through the fall, you know, winter, spring, you're just going to have 6 months of like drizzle, basically, you know, where here in Central Texas, you get like thunderstorms that roll through and they boil up out of nowhere. It's a big convergence zone that happens here with the jet stream and then the Gulf moisture coming north. You got the jet stream coming in from the west to the east, and then that collides with the warm, moist air that's being pushed up from the Gulf and creates this line. You'll see it all the time if you look at the national weather map. Just it creates these lines of thunderstorms that go all the way up into Michigan and then move over to where you're at on the East Coast. And then combine that with the hot summers. You know, I think we might have hit 100 today. We're looking at, you know, the forecast for the next week was like 98, 99, 100, 97, you know, very hot week that we've got coming up. So it's really just understanding the weather and how you've got to be smart to work around it. So in the Northwest, you know, that was learning how to build incredible tents and how to run heat and protect your job in the winter so you can keep working. Because if you waited for a dry day, you would have, you know, 3 to 4 days a month that maybe you could get out and work. So we got really good at building tents and just being able to keep working no matter what. Here in Texas, you've got the rain to deal with, but usually you can afford to shut down for a day if there's going to be a thunderstorm rolling through and then get going again. But the bigger thing to deal with here is the heat. So getting started early in the morning and getting done by the early afternoon before that temperature peaks is something you got to be very conscious of here, you know, and then combining that with what's the exposure of your job, making sure you and your crew are staying hydrated. You're taking the breaks in the shade that you need, you know, and just being realistic about what you can do in the heat. It's not about being tough or not being a pussy. It's about being smart, and playing the long game. You know, you got to take care of your body if you want to be in the trades. Cause I mean, I love the work I do, but I'm also trying to build a company, you know, so I know I'm not going to always be hitting in 40 hours a week of production. I hope to always be, you know, being able to jump in and do actual production work here and there as the company continues to grow. But, you know, beyond that, I'll have a responsibility to make sure my people who are doing the work are being smart with the weather. And then communicating that expectation to a client, you know, hey, it's dawn at 6 a.m. We're going to be here at 6:15 to get started. And then we're going to be gone by 2, you know. And so maybe that means you don't really take a lunch. You take a couple standing breaks. But that way you get in the, you know, hopefully 7-8 hours of production a day that you kind of plan around. But then you're done before the heat of the day, and people still have, you know, some time to go home and have, you know, a little home time. And then before they got to get to bed early, to make sure they can get up early and have a productive day.
There you go. Having that set schedule in the sense that you set a goal around 7-8 hours. And if you can accomplish it, great. If not, that's okay. You figure out what worked and what didn't work. My next follow-up talking point would be, would you say, is there anything in particular you do, or any tips or tricks you do to withstand the heat? Do you do something special? Do you have a secret thing? What are some things?
So right now we're actually kind of waiting for a job to get ready. So I was able to get to the gym this morning.
There you go.
And I got yesterday. I was able to go yesterday, and I'll be at a 6 a.m. workout tomorrow. But after I work out today, I just did a stretch. But either way, I hit the sauna. So mm-hmm. I did 2 20-minute rounds at around 190, 195 degrees this morning. So when you spend a total of 40 minutes, you know, at around 190 degrees, it doesn't feel so bad stepping out into the 90-degree heat. So sauna is actually incredible with boosting that heat tolerance and getting your body used to it, so it doesn't just freak out, you know. And then staying very conscious on my hydration and your right. and your fueling, because you're burning a lot more calories when it's hot. You know, I really look at construction work as almost like you're getting paid to work out. You know, I remember telling guys all the time, like, make no mistake, this is a physical pursuit that we're doing. And if you treat it like that, then again, that longevity thing. You know, we're construction athletes is one way to look at it. You're outside, you're dealing with the elements. You know, something I've always said is we move slow all day and carry heavy things. And, you know, I like to supplement that with some extra exercise, because being strong makes everything easier. You know, I'm very conscious on my hydration, making sure I'm taking in electrolytes, whether that's salt. You know, I get up in the morning and put lemon juice and salt in a cup, and, you know, about a quart of water, and I slam that first thing in the morning. And then I get my water bottles ready, and a couple of them, I put a couple of cracks of sea salt in there. And then I have these little noon tabs or electrolyte tabs, and I'll put that in my water throughout the day. You just drink, you see a lot of these guys and they've got purified water, and they've got they've got plats and plats of purified water in the back of their truck. Well, purified water actually strips your body of electrolytes, and so is decreasing your body's ability to hold on to and utilize that water. So it's not just drinking water, it's drinking the right type of water to make sure it's accessible to your tissues.
Good fun fact right there about the water, because you're right, you see these athletes, they don't just physically drink water all the time. They drink these other things like sports drinks and all the stuff that makes your body feel good inside and gives you the right amount of balance. And I know you said physically, though, I have to ask you the flip side. What's the percentage of your job mentally? In other words, what percentage mentally do you have to do to block out the heat, to block out any distractions, to block out the roof tarmac, all that coming at you? What are some things that you have to do mentally to block it out? What percentage would you say?
That's an interesting question. You know, I think whether it's, you know, it's all back up to kind of comparing Seattle and Austin on, the, mm-hmm. on that point, because in the Northwest in the winter, it will be 39 degrees and drizzling. And that, you know, that penetrates you to the bone, because, you know, just break it back to physics, right? When the humidity is higher, the air is more conductive, mm-hmm. right, of the temperature. So whether that's the warm migrating to your body here in Texas, or whether it's the warm of your body migrating to the cold air in the Northwest, when it's higher humidity, that transfer is more efficient. You know, I don't know if you've ever experienced high heat, you know, but you can be somewhere and it's 110, like Arizona, but if it's only 10% humidity, it's not that it's not hot, but I'll take 105 and 10% humidity over 90 degrees and 60% humidity, because the air is literally heavier, you know, and is more suffocating. And your sweat is not evaporating as quickly and carrying away that excess body heat, you know, right? Which is why we sweat. The water goes on, the evaporation carries away the heat from the body. Well, when the air is humid, that evaporation is not happening, you know? So it's just a more suffocating effect of that temperature, whether it's cold or hot. And so to get back to your question though, you know, what's the mental component of that? I think luckily I've just kind of always been geared for that, whether I was into endurance sports, growing up, you know, whether it's like basketball, that's an endurance sport. I did that until I was in about 10th grade. And then when I was able to start driving and of a certain age where, you know, after years of Boy Scouts and being in the outdoors, my parents were comfortable letting us go and do other more extreme things like rock climbing and mountaineering in the Northwest. You know, so I've climbed Mount Rainier when I was 15 years old in the Northwest. It's a 14,000 foot peak. And that's a pure mental exercise. Yeah, there's the technical side of it, of, you know, traveling with crampons on a rope on glacier. Like, but that's the exposure, but it's really just a long hike. There are more technical routes that you can climb on mountains, but a lot of mountains, it's just a long hike with exposure, you know, the potential for a fall, whether that's down, you know, a 2000 foot, very steep snow slope or into a crevasse. But beyond that, it's just a long walk with weight on your back or doing cross country or track, you know, in track, I did the 2 mile and the mile. And cross country is just, you know, 3 miles, but it's, you know, up hills over logs, through creeks and fast, right? So it's 20 minutes of pure hell. And I think that's carried forward into my construction career where, okay, it's cold out, it's raining. Well, let me layer up. Let me make sure I'm being smart about what I'm choosing to layer up with. I'm not wearing cotton. I'm wearing performance wicking fabrics that are, you know, insulative and that won't soak up water. And then I'm making sure to wear a, you know, a layer that's going to protect me from the rain. Or whether that's being in the heat, you know, a lot of people that don't work outside in the heat, they might think, oh, I'm going to be outside. It's hot. I want to wear shorts and a short sleeve t-shirt. And it's actually the opposite. You want to wear long pants, long sleeves, you know, I wear gloves all the time just because of the work we do. I like to protect my hands. You know, I still get calluses, but I don't get all the annoying cuts that you get when you don't wear gloves. And you wear a big floppy hat and protect yourself from that sun exposure. You know, and then again, not wearing cotton socks, wearing socks that wick the moisture away, wearing the right underwear, right? You know, I still wear cotton pants because they actually do a decent job. But then I wear performance fabric shirts that, you know, breathe well, wick the moisture away, you know, but then give that protection from the sun. So, you know, and so it's a mental process of prep and then just knowing that that's what it takes to get the work done, you know, and then. So you have to combine that mental kind of fortitude and toughness with then also being realistic about your body. And if you start noticing, you know, the effects of cold or the effects of heat, making a correction, you know, is that a change of clothes? Is it taking a break and some shade and getting some cold water? You know, another thing I've noticed working in the heat is actually to stay out of air conditioning as much as I can. So if I've got to go between jobs or I got to go run an errand, instead of hopping in the van and cranking the air conditioning, I hop in the van and I roll the windows down. And I don't ever, you know, yo-yo in and out of that temperature, you know, temperature that my body's dealing with. If that makes sense.
No, for sure. It's just those little nuances for mental preparation to get you actually. It's almost like the pregame before the game. You know, you get ready, you do all these things. And one thing I liked that you said was keep it heat, basically. Keep the heat within the heat. Wear the long sleeve. Don't go too much in the air condition, because if you do the short sleeve air condition, well, then you're used to the cold when you get back to the heat. Not only you run the risk of getting sick, but you also run the risk of not finishing the job, because when you get back out there, it could kind of shock your body. So staying mentally fit and mentally and physically fit, but also mentally knowing that you do the little things and don't slip up. It could, I don't know, save you maybe an hour or two, you know, or even a half hour. Just the fact that you did all these nuances and good work there with the salt, the sea salt in the water too. Got to add that. That's something that maybe I'll even try, or any of the audience, just try that. If you're in the heat, just a little salt in there, get the little electrolytes, and you go from there for sure.
Yep.
The next talking point is your family. How has your family supported you through the journey?
Well, my, you know, I'm actually not super close with my family. It's not that there's any like contention or problems there, or that I had any terrible childhood.
Right.
I think it's more just the culture of our family, you know? So in the beginning of Seattle Waterproof Deck, actually my parents lent me $1,500 to start that, to get the down payment on the insurance that was required to be a contractor in Washington State. So, and then a couple other times early in the business, they, you know, my mom came and helped with the books, and they bought a basic desktop computer. I think one other time I got a little bit of money from them, but you know, not much. They're doing better financially now, but you know, growing up, we were never like super poor, but we definitely didn't have money, you know? So even asking them for $1,500 when I started my first company was a big ask. I think that's a bigger pattern that maybe is just a part of how I am too. I've always just kind of wanted to do things on my own also, you know, I'd probably rather figure it out on my own, do the research myself, versus relying on them to show me the way, you know,
more independent.
I just think I've just kind of always been an independent person. I remember like trying to convince my mom that I should move out when I was a senior in high school, you know, just because I was 18 and I had a job. I was working 35 hours a week, you know, between two different jobs, and I had the money to move out. I was like, oh, why don't I move out? And she's like, no. I'm like, okay. So I waited till I was, you know, 19 and a half to move out. So, and never looked back, you know, I never rebounded back home. After moving out, where you know my other two brothers, you know, did a number of times, so which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I just think personally, I was always wired to dive in, figure it out myself, take the lumps, you know, and sometimes learn the hard way, like I did with my first business. But keep moving forward no matter what.
Yeah, I think finding that intuition to keep going, but also, not that they got your back, but making those independent choices can move you forward. And my follow-up point would be, would you say you've always had this innovative personality from birth, or do you feel like you've developed it even more now that you kind of go through those independent projects when you were young and now older?
No, I think I've had it looking back. Mm-hmm. I remember waking up for getting up like early in the morning for my first day at kindergarten. And I like, you know, knew what I was going to wear, and I got up and got dressed and went and woke my mom up like, hey mom, I'm ready to go to school. Well, what I didn't understand was that kindergarten it was only half day kindergarten, and I was in the afternoon class.
Oh.
I was like, what? I'm only going for half a day. I just remember that thought, like, what? You know? So, you know, whether it was that or, you know, then moving forward to third grade and doing this thing called the Sunshine Sales Club, which I think I found through a magazine that I was, you know, I don't know if it was like, you know, I forget the name of the Nature magazine, or if it was what's that puzzle magazine from back in the day. You're a young man. You probably don't know what a magazine is. But, you know, but anyways, this sales club, and you got a catalog, and you walked around, and I walked around door to door in our apartment selling stationery and greeting cards through this catalog. And then, you know, people pay me and I'd order it, then go deliver it. And then we set up, this is kind of along the lines of Gary Vaynerchuk, but I didn't have the same entrepreneurial example he had of his father, but just, you know, we set up a baseball card shop in a garage in our apartments. Yeah, of course, you know, we didn't make any money at it, but it was, you know, in fact, I got my stuff stolen from me from the older kids. But then after that, you know, then we were making bracelets. We were making bracelets out of yarn and selling the ones we'd made, or we would make one custom for somebody. And moving forward to like fifth, sixth grade, it was knocking door to door in the apartments to wash cars. Was something we did, or going to the manager of the apartment and, you know, hey, is there any work we can do? And sometimes like, yeah, go sweep up all the curbs and give you $20, you know, or whatever it was. You know, and then having a paper out, I had a paper out when I was, I guess I would have been probably sixth, seventh grade, I think. Had a paper out for a couple of years. You know, and that was, get up every morning, go to the shack where the papers were dropped off in the dark and stuff all the ads in them and hook them up to the trailer on my bike and ride up the hill to the country club and drive around in the country club and deliver the papers and come back home and go to school. You know, and then to get my first job, you know, basically as soon as I could, I think I was like 16 and a half, and you needed to be 16 to get most jobs. In the Seattle area when I was that age. So, you know, got my first job at 16 and a half at Jack in the Box. And within 4 months, I'm a manager, which is really odd being a 16-year-old telling 40-year-olds what to do. you know, I actually thought at one point I thought I was going to have a career in fast food. I was like, this isn't so bad. And, you know, the regional guys made good money, but obviously didn't stick with that. Yeah, and then, you know, deciding to start my own construction company, you know, when I was, I guess it would have been 26 when I started that first company. My partner I started that with was 24 and had been a good friend of mine, you know, through Boy Scouts and some of those other adventures we talked about earlier. So, yeah, I think I've just kind of always been a bit of a self-starter and a go-getter, and any job I've had, I've always you know, thrown myself into it and been able to excel in. And yeah, I mean, it's just the way I'm wired, because my brothers were great, but you know, but they're a little different in that respect. They just didn't have the same natural kind of hustle I did. You know, they had their own areas of strength, but not the kind of entrepreneurial gene, I guess.
There you go. Yeah, sometimes having that work ethic, having that knack for business entrepreneurship and getting up and doing it, it gives you that humble attitude to go after, like you said. And through the journey, you change course, you deliver these options, you weigh it out, but you stick to what you know. You go to your business, you hook up with some buddies, and here you are now, right? There you go. Right. And the next talking point is, what is one message you would give to just anybody who wants to get not only into waterproofing, but just entrepreneurship too? That's been a big talk in this conversation.
Yeah. You know, that's tough because I think it can vary from the person, and I might want to, you know, get to know a person before I could provide some feedback, but just trying to think in general, you know, especially when you're starting from scratch, you know, with little to no money, it's just going to be all up to you. Like, and excuses are just that. They're complete excuses. If you're going to sit there and say, oh, well, I can't do that because of this, well, then you need to fucking figure that out, right? So you can move forward. is a great book, actually. I just reread again recently, called The Obstacle is the Way, by Ryan Holiday. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but, you know, a quote in there from Marcus Aurelius, and it's kind of where the concept of the book came from, is, you know, I'm going to paraphrase a little bit here, but the impediment to action, you know, advances action. What stands in the way becomes the way. And having that mentality that you're going to have constant obstacles to overcome. And there's another quote that I like, is that, I'm not sure who to attribute this to, but obstacles are the things you see when you take your eye off the goal. Like, it's not going to be easy. Anything. Yeah, I'm gonna spit a lot of rhetorical cliche stuff right now, but anything worth doing is probably going to be hard to do, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and so knowing that, first pick something that you're passionate about, or that you have an interest in, or that you're good at and you enjoy, right? I mean, that's another way to look at it. If you're good at it and you like doing it, and you want to, and you want to build a business, well, make sure that it's something you like, and that you're at least kind of decent or competent, or can become, or have the desire to become competent at. And realize you're going to fall on your face. You know, very, very few people make it. I mean, just so often you'll talk to people that have started businesses, and they've had one that have failed, or they've gone through the point where, you know, they thought it was all over, and they just barely made it through a predicament. And that's actually the point where a lot of people quit. And frankly, I think that when I look back at my previous business, I did just kind of quit. I just kind of gave up. And it was because I had a lack of personal discipline of really, truly hunkering down and doing the work that needed to be done to correct the things that were making my previous business unfair. And it was really, you know, personal. I just wasn't being disciplined enough to do the work. You know, I was just a little burnt out after 7 years and felt like I could go make, you know, better money and get a job. But more money wasn't the answer. More self-awareness, more personal discipline, and more focused work was really the answer. So, you know, I think that would be the main thing, is just, you know it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be fancy cars and vacations and nice things right in the beginning. Unless you already had those things. And if you do chase those things too early, you're really just hurting your business. You're taking short-term rewards at the expense of long-term true success and true wealth.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know if that sums it up.
No, pretty much. I mean, you want to think, of course you want to think short-term of how you get it up and running, but after that, after like the first couple months, long-term success, what's going to be that revolutionary name, that legendary name in your honor, legacy in the next 10, 20, 25, 30 years, rather than focus on the next 2-3 months where, yeah, you get all this stuff, where does it go from there? And I guess my next follow-up talking point here, would you say at a younger age, if looking back, hindsight is talking about 2020, of course, would you say looking back, if you had understood the value aspect and providing more value, would you have changed it moving forward of just running a business?
So providing more value.
Like when you were younger, just kind of understand personal development and value, would you have changed it now? Would you have done anything different? In the first business.
I'd do a freaking million things different. you know, yeah, mostly just probably the main thing would be getting a bookkeeper earlier on. Probably would have been the main thing. Getting a bookkeeper and a more regular CPA involved in the business early on would have been probably a huge benefit. And probably that coupled with seeking probably a mentor at that time. Especially because it was pre-podcast, I think now a lot of my mentors are people I don't know personally, but they're people I choose to pay attention to. You know, they say you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Well, you know, actually I haven't made a ton of friends since we moved to Texas. Definitely have a few good ones that we've made, but you know, overall I'd probably spend more time listening to podcasts than I do hanging out with people other than my wife. And so I think just, yeah, early on, I think, you know, rather than changing anything I did, because that's kind of wasted energy to even think about, you know, like I definitely try to live without regrets. Are there things I've done that I regret? Absolutely. But do I dwell on those things and do I let them consume me? But I try to remember them and I try to make, you know, better decisions next time, you know, certain situations arise or opportunities present themselves. But I think seeking a mentor earlier on would have been better, because there just wasn't the, you know, we're only talking 10 years, but it's a sea change of difference. The information that's out there, if you go seek it, and the minds you can tap into through podcasting and through YouTube and you know, and through Instagram, it's phenomenal. And that accelerated rate of development that allows is amazing. So, you know, 10 years ago probably would have been, you know, looking at some of the successful builders that I worked for and more actively pursuing them as a mentor.
Yeah. I think you're right. Just now that I think about the social aspect, I mean, 10 years ago, what was Instagram? What was this? What was even Twitter? I mean, none of this stuff was really taking off yet. It was just beginning.
Twitter was brand new. Facebook, I think, was still just for students, and maybe was it 2009 or so that it came out for everybody?
Started to take off a little bit. Yeah. Even then, that's it. It's interesting how those companies, to those social brands, they're starting from scratch too. And when they do take off, it's amazing what could happen. So I think looking at that, looking at those miles, and now with the modern day podcast, which has been around, but now that it's in more mainstream content, with the more modern day podcasting, you can now connect with your mentor more than ever. And all you got to do is just hear what they say and hear your voice and take a couple mental notes. It's amazing for sure how social and technology has changed the world.
Yeah, because, you know, now my mentors are Gary Vaynerchuk, Tim Ferriss, Joe Rogan, Elon Musk, you know, like these incredible people you just never would have had this access to before.
There you go. It's all about just taking that and moving forward and trying to apply it to your business or whatever you choose. Good advice there, Sean. The next talking point with our final two here is, what is some of your goals in the next 5 years, whether it be your business, personally, or anything you want to share?
Yeah, I think personally, we'd like to, my wife and I would like to establish a piece of property here in Texas somewhere, ideally, you know, within, you know, probably an hour or two of Austin, or maybe even San Antonio, kind of in the central Texas area. Austin and San Antonio are about an hour and a half, hour 45 minutes apart. They're pretty close. So we'd like to establish a piece of property with a probably a tiny home at first on a trailer on the property, and maybe build a small compound, a small house, but maybe with a couple of outbuildings, you know, a nice shop, you know, probably have a garden and kind of develop a little, you know, country compound, if you will. And then maybe a small condo or apartment in the city. So kind of establish a town and country lifestyle where, you know, we can come into the city and crush it for, you know, a few days, a few weeks, but then retreat out to the country and, you know, maybe spend 3 days a week out there and then spend the rest of the time in the city. I'd like to, you know, my broader goal beyond working for myself is to build a business. Like I love the work I do. and I love working with my hands, but I have this ambition kind of for legacy. So like, we don't plan on having children. Maybe we'll adopt later in life, or but you know, who knows, we're kind of playing that one as it goes, but we don't plan on having our own kids. That's not the plan right now, at least. And so, but we, you know, I still think about legacy and what is a positive, positive lasting impact that, that I can have. And I think that's in building a great place to work, and then turning that over to the employees. So creating an employee-owned business is my goal. And maybe it's not this one. Maybe this business crash and burns too, and I have to do it with something else. But, you know, I certainly, that's not my intention, obviously, and not right. my hope. And I'm pretty optimistic I can avoid that, but by staying disciplined and growing smartly. But I'd like to create a company that I leave in the hands of the employees. And I want to do it, and I want to do it in a different way. A lot of times what happens is the employees buy the company from the owner, and they're like, a loan is taken out and the employees pay back the loan. I want to build my ESOP. It's an employee stock option program, in a way where the employees earn their stake of the company as they work. Rather than having to come out of pocket later. And without diving into the minutia of that, it's just, instead of taking from their future income, you know, I'll pay them an extra dollar per hour that's going towards their purchase of the company that's being contributed to that employee stock ownership program. But it's an extra dollar above and beyond what I would normally pay them anyway. You know, and I'm just kind of throwing a dollar out there. It could be $2, could be 50 cents. I don't know. I haven't gotten to the point where I know I have to figure that out. First, I just need to establish the business, get it up and rolling, get a few employees on board, you know, and then I can start worrying about building that thing. And that's something I learned, you know, from my first go around, is what do I really need to be focused on right now? And kind of like looking at Elon Musk, you know, he's just figuring things out one at a time. He's like, they're like, well, what are we going to do when we get to Mars? He's like, I don't know. First, I'm trying to build the rocket that will get us there. And once I have the rocket that will get us there, then I'll figure out the next part. Because I'm, you know, so I'm kind of trying to stay disciplined in that. Just doing the work that needs to be done now, but making sure it's moving towards that North Star, towards that goal that I have in mind. So I hope that in the next 5 years, I've established that program and it's in place. And I hope to have, you know, some fully vested or maybe at least 75% vested employees at that point. That's kind of the personal and business side. And the two will fuel each other.
Funnel. Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot when you said giving the employee the benefits too. It's taking the less burden on them to take eventually to get to that level, take a loan out, and then – it's almost like debt. It's like, oh, what do we do? You know, and whereas this is, you're working with them, you're giving them the benefits right now and the young journey and their journeys, and you work together with and collaborate on it and go from there. I like that. And with back to what you were saying, just some personal goals. Yeah, not everyone's meant to have a kid. You know, I think it definitely takes a lot of work from a lot of the people I've interviewed and a lot of the people who just post on social about newborns and all that. So just
there's a lot investing of time.
Yeah. I think expectations come with that too. Whereas investing in yourself or your wife, it'll be more of a subdued goal, but in reality, it's the long-term effect that will get you to the place you want to go for sure.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, I think a lot of, and this is actually a lesson I learned from my mom, and she's very supportive of this idea. You know, she's never pressured us to have kids at all. But I remember her talking about some other members in our family who, you know, grew up and got married and had kids because it's what you're supposed to do when those people probably shouldn't have been married and they probably shouldn't have had kids, you know? You know, that was her opinion at least. Even though those kids are great people now, you know, and that really sunk in with me. And then, it's really solidified when I, you know, met my wife prior prior to us being married, and both kind of being on the same page. And I remember being just kind of even a weird thing to bring up to each other. You know, you could tell it's kind of a weird subject because it's such a potential for a huge difference in, you know, in life goals and trajectory. And then we traveled to Nepal, when we had known each other for less than a year. We traveled for a month to Nepal together, and just, you see the amount of kids that are out there, whether it's in third world countries or even on our own, that need love. And so we were always like, well, we could always adopt when we're like 50 and still have plenty of time to raise a kid, but probably be in a better financial position than a lot of people are that have kids, and create, you know, maybe some resentment of themselves, of their children, of their spouse, of the world, because they just followed this path that's put them in a constant state of stress and kind of always being behind the eight ball. You know, it's, you know, I know people say, oh, you'll figure it out. If you don't have money, you'll figure it out. But yeah, but I'd rather be a little more financially set and stable, established. And shit, man, I know I would be a much better father now than when I was 35 or when I was 30 or when I was 25. And how much better of an influence or impact that I have on a young developing person when I'm 50. Right?
Yeah, I like that.
Instead of just being 20 years older than them and just figuring shit out and trying. I think about my mom being, she was 20 for 22 days when I was born.
Wow.
When my mom was my age, I was graduating high school. And that just trips me out. To think about, like, I'm 38, I'll be 39. Like, I'm just figuring out that I will never figure it out, you know.
I like that though. I like how you said that. You'd rather be older knowing stability. I think with the kids, we'll start with the kids. I think when you have kids old, you also have more life experience. I think that's another thing. You get more experience. You know, you've seen it all. If you do adopt,
yeah.
And at the end of the day, man, you're right. Stability is the best ability, because if you can't be 100% sure you're going to be safe, then where are you going to go from there? What if something bad happens the next day, and you're not secure? You never know what can happen in life. It just throws these massive curveballs. And I think if you can start with just having stability first, and then building your way, like you said, and your plan is, that's what will ultimately give the best future to your future kid if you do adopt. Or even to your wife, and more importantly, like you said, your legacy as you leave it behind to your employees.
Right.
And our final point would be a fun point. What is one thing I'd tell the Anchor Nation that they may not know about you? That could be a fun fact.
Actually, you know, you sent some of these questions ahead of time, and I actually remember reading this one thinking it was going to be the fact that we're not planning on having kids, because I think it's becoming more
common.
It's definitely not norm to have that intention and that mentality. What's one thing they may not know about me? Well, I think the Anchor Nation probably doesn't know anything about me beyond what's been discussed in this podcast. So there's probably a lot of things they don't know about me, more than they do.
Anything will go then. That'll be great.
Yeah. Well, I think rather than trying to ramble coming up with something, I think just, yeah, man, I can't think of anything right now. Sorry.
There we go. You leave it with that. That's all right. When you just don't know,
here you go.
You just don't know.
I am 100,000% comfortable saying that I don't know. That's what they didn't know about me. I have no problem saying I don't know. I have no problem stopping a conversation to say, no, actually, you know what? I don't understand what you just said. Can you clarify that? Or, hey, let me clarify something you just said so that I make sure I'm
understanding. You don't know.
Yeah.
You just don't know. Yeah. At the end of the day, everybody, whatever you have been taught, you don't know.
That's right.
You just don't know what could happen. So Expect the unexpected, I think, is a great way to end the interview. Yeah. But before we go, Sean, you want to DM your social media so people can find you?
Yeah, I think if you search search Austin Waterproof Deck on Instagram, we'll come right up. If you search Sean Dunn, it's S-H-A-U-N. Maybe that's one thing they didn't know about me. I spell Sean, S-H-A-U-N, but I answer to any of them. and the last name's Dunn, D-U-N-N. If you search Sean Dunn, you'll find, I actually have a personal profile that's public up there. I'm not too active on that right now just because the focus has been my business. Yeah, I'm there on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Probably find me there. For any reason, somebody wants to get in touch with me, you know, you can contact me through the socials if you find me there. AustinWaterproofDeck.com. There's a contact form there, or my email is just Sean, S-H-A-U-N, at AustinWaterproofDeck.com.
There you go. And there you go. You can contact either Sean on his business or profile, personal page. And thank you to the Anchor Nation for always giving your undivided attention, not only myself, but the interviewee. And Sean, my man, it's been a pleasure. Thanks again.
Thanks, Evan.
Hi, Anchor Nation. This is Kevin Touch of Anchor Nation Community Radio, and I'd like to say thank you for listening to the Anchor Nation podcast. If you'd like to book an interview or DM me on Instagram, follow me at the Anchor Nation. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, it is also under the Anchor Nation. Thank you for listening and enjoy.